have them find me. And, you know, because it was like that. I mean, you know, you could go anywhere and they could pick you up off the street. And no, we never saw him. He never made it here. He checked into the hotel. We haven't seen him since. So, I mean, anything they could say. Actually, at a certain point, I have a copy of the publication. It's called Communist, funny enough. It's the official magazine, official journal of the Soviet Communist Party. And I don't remember what year that was, but there was an article by the number two man in the KGB, Semyon Svigun. And it was a big long article about bad influences and the threats to the Soviet state. And he said the three greatest threats to the Soviet Union were Western music, pop culture, and Hare Krishna. So we kind of thought, you know, number one, it's great publicity. Number two, it's really an acknowledgement on the effect that Krishna consciousness was having in the country. And that was during the time, because all this started with the regime of Leonid Brezhnev. And this was in the heart of the Cold War. I mean, so there were really tough relations between America and the Soviet Union. And right at the same time when Svigun wrote that article, Yuri Andropov became the president of the country, short-lived. But he was the number one man in the KGB, and the number two man in the KGB was Svigun. So, I mean, you know, and this is the official publication. So, you know, the top guy knew that we were, or thought we were a threat. talking about taking, when Dumarkesh and I would travel to Finland, Denmark, England, France, the first thing we would do is we'd pull out a phone book for that city, and we'd find TASS press agent, TASS news service, Novosti press agency, the Soviet embassy, the Soviet trade commission, the Soviet, delegation to the UN, whatever. And so we would find all these places, and we would go and walk in with a book bag, these two American guys walking in Denmark to a Soviet institution. And I'd start off with my very fluent Russian, asking them if they speak English, and then asking them if they ever saw this movie in Russia called Indiski Yogi Kto Ani, means Indian yogis, who are they? And anybody say, da, 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 очень хорошо. I mean, they loved. Everybody in the country who was alive then saw this movie. And they loved it. It was like, you know, yogis, you know, like for 180 years and their fingernails growing through their hands and, you know, big long beards and skinny, you know, from not eating for the last 70 years. It was like an amazing movie. And everybody, so I said, well, we happen to have books that are the same thing like that movie. And they said, really? And so we would give them Bhagavad Gita, and they'd all, you know, all come around. And this one would say, can I have two? And this one would say, can I have three? Oh, one's okay. And we would pass out books like crazy. And then when we were done, if we had books left, which we always planned, of course, to have books left, I'd say, can we leave some for the others who aren't here now? They said, yes, of course. So we put them on the windowsill or on a desk, and we'd leave them. These are the guys, as Mon McKinney was saying about the Indian guy who had diplomatic passport. These guys also, I mean, they don't get scrutinized when they go home. And they're guys who are in the West. They go and they see movies, they go out, they have contact with the, you know, things that the regular Russians don't have. The Russian Soviets don't have access to. So we would leave books. So one day I was driving the car in Sweden, and I heard on the news that there was going to be a summit conference in Reykjavik, Iceland, with Gorbachev and President Reagan. And we had two devotees there who were selling paintings to raise money to pay for our Soviet work. So I said, oh my God, we already got two guys there. Let's get into this on two fronts. So Hari Puja made, we took a big full-size bed sheet and wrote, Mr. Gorbachev, peace begins at home. Please free the Soviet Hare Krishnas. And I think we had the mantra on the bottom of it. And so we found out, you know, so immediately I flew to Iceland with a whole bunch of these reports, a whole bunch of Bhagavad Gitas, and this big bed sheet. And found out where the Soviets were staying, where the Americans were staying, the hotel, where they were having their conferences. And so what we had is these two devotees stood out in front of the hotel that they were having their summit meeting in, and they stood out in the morning and they stood out in the evening and at lunchtime so that Mr. Gorbachev and the Soviet members of the delegation, and it was all these guys that when you're in America and you hear about all these diplomats, Soviet diplomats, the foreign minister and the secretary of this and that, they were all there. So it was all the top echelon of Soviet leadership. And they, I mean, for sure they all saw it, also assigned. The devotees saw one limousine drive by very slowly, and they saw Mr. Gorbachev in looking out the window at the sign. And so they worked that angle, and I went inside. I got press credentials, and I went inside with Bhagavad Gitas and with our report. So I would meet these top leader guys and press people and others who were their assistants, and I'd give them a Bhagavad Gita. I'd tell them what it was, and they were all very excited and took it. And I said, and this I want to give to you also. This tells what your government is doing to my friends simply because of this book of Indian philosophy and culture. And they took that also. And it was pretty intense, but I mean, all these guys are getting this, and it's all the people who, you know, should be finding out and should be reading it both ways. And then at the end of the summit conference, there were two press conferences. Gorbachev had a press conference, and Reagan had a press conference. I said, I want to go to Gorbachev's. I don't want to go to Reagan's. So I went to Gorbachev's press conference. I was in the third row, and I was looking around where who was who, and he's already got a book, he's got a book, he's got a book. And you know, they all had gotten books. So then I saw Gorbachev's wife, and I wanted to give her, I thought if I go to her and try to give her a Bhagavad Gita, I have to be careful, but I think I could do it. But she left early. And then I looked to my right, and three people away from me was this bald guy with a mustache. And he was Gorbachev's official interpreter for whenever Gorbachev would meet with English-speaking press or diplomats, that he would be Gorbachev's interpreter. And I said, oh my God, I don't believe it. He's right next to me. So at the end of the press conference, I made a bolt for him. And I said, excuse me, I said, can I give you one of these? And I held out the Russian Bhagavad Gita. And he said, I already have one. And I said, really? He said, yeah, I've already got one. And he said, well, and I said, could I give you one for Mr. Gorbachev? He said, he has one too. And I said, come on. He said, no, really, I gave it to him. And I said, where did you get it? He said, at our embassy in Copenhagen. So it's like, here it was, you know, I mean, you know, you leave the book, you give the books, you leave the books, and the president of the country gets one of them. So I just found that, you know, I mean, wherever, just that's the way Krishna and Prabhupada worked, that wherever we, you know, touched was an opportunity to, you know, get Krishna consciousness into the country. And it was amazing. Huh? Yeah, sure, why not? I'm going to stop talking soon. It's almost her time.
You still have the sheet?
This says Bhaktini. Huh? This is signed by the artist. Bhaktini Natasha, 1989, Moscow.
Thanks a lot, Jatari. Now I can't say anything else. I think I just want to say one more thing. Oh, one more thing, I think. It's like that guy Columbo. One more thing. Nobody knows Columbo, right? And in 1989, just the way things were going and the things were opening up a bit, I had an idea that we should take Soviet devotees to the Mayapur Vrindavan Festival. There was one devotee from Georgia. I don't remember his name. Not Georgia, right above us. Georgia, Soviet Republic. And he went on his own. Somehow or other, he went on his own to to the festival. But it must have been the end of 1988 because it took time. So I called Krishna Kumar, who was the president of what we became registered as the Moscow Society for Krishna Consciousness. So he was the representative to the KGB and to the government from all the devotees and from me in the West. And I told him, we have to take devotees to India. You should create two lists. You should create a list of 25, the A list, and we should have a B list of 25 who, if somebody from the A list can't go, we'll pull from the B list and put them on the A list. So he went through and he made this list with the other organizers and managers in Moscow. And he called me up and he said, we have a problem. I said, oh my God, what? He said, we can't make a B list. All we can make is an A list. And it has 59 devotees on it. And I said, oh my God, what are we going to do? I said, so let's take 59. And he said, really? I said, yeah, let's take 59. He said, okay. So he made a meeting with this Mr. Chernetsov, who was our main KGB man he was with the Council for Religious Affairs, KGB, to deal with, other religions. So he gave this list to Mr. Chernetsov of 59 devotees. Chernetsov responded. He said, we can't give you permission for 59 devotees to go. He said, there are millions of Muslims in the Soviet Union, and 50 get permission to go to the Hajj every year in Mecca. He said, we can't give for a few thousand devotees 59. I said, well, that's what we tell them. That's what we want. We want them all 59 to go. So back and forth and back and forth. And eventually they said, okay, all 59 can go. But then they held back the passports for some of them. So, and they were really dragging their feet on giving them permission to go. So I told Krishna Kumar, take a group of devotees down to the foreign ministry with chains and padlocks and padlock yourselves to the gate and tell them we're not going until you give permission for all the remaining ones to go. And they did it. They went and padlocked themselves to the gate. And they said, okay. And they had called the press and, press came report, said, okay, we'll give everybody permission. So 59 devotees got to go to India that first trip, which was an unbelievable experience. You want that thing? She doesn't want to hold it. I don't want to hold it either. From the back.
You had mentioned that every time you needed books, Hare Krishna Maharaj would print 50,000. And I found a book report from 1986. You wrote, I am happy to inform you that the distribution of the... from you to the committee. I am happy to inform you that the distribution of the Russian edition of Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is going on nicely. We are just about to print another 10,000 copies. That will make a total of 40,000 Russian Gitas in print here. The distribution is enthusiastically going on all around the world, including India, Asia, Africa, Europe, North and South America, Australia, and of course the USSR. So after 86, then it started to get more and more up until like by 1990, there was so many books in publication. This is also something that you wrote. You wrote a report every once in a while about the Free the Soviet Hare Krishna.
Right. This Moscow Society for Krishna Consciousness, that became our official organization in the Soviet Union. And we were the first religious organization registered by the government since World War II. So really kind of unprecedented.
So this is 1986. How many years later is it now?
2016.
30 years. So 30 years later, here's my husband's foretelling of the future. Well, you told, and then Srila Prabhupada told also. We see how Krishna, in his incarnation of Nrisimhadev, protected his great devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, from the torture of the atheistic king. Such torture was there, and Lord Nrisimhadev protected Prahlad. So I think that Krishna will also protect all of you from the torture that you are now experiencing. Actually, Srila Prabhupada stated that in the beginning stages of spreading Krishna consciousness throughout the world, people would laugh at us and ridicule us. Later on, they would persecute us, and eventually they would adore us. This statement of Srila Prabhupada cannot be taken lightly. We can see that we have entered into the second stage in our activities in the USSR. We must know for certain that the third stage will come. The day will come when our movement will be so much appreciated in the Soviet Union that you cannot imagine it. 30 years ago, written.
Prabhupada said that the Russian people are the biggest atheists. If they can take to Krishna consciousness, they'll become the biggest theists and the best devotees.
Srila Prabhupada says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela, Chapter 8, Text 20, the only possible remedy that can counteract the tendency toward communism is the Krishna consciousness movement. According to the doctrine of communism, the state should be the proprietor of everything. Expanding on the same idea, the Krishna consciousness movement accepts God as the proprietor of everything. So Srila Prabhupada stated that the only possible remedy that could counteract the tendency toward communism was the Krishna consciousness movement. And now, you know, we're sitting here, it began in 1971 with Srila Prabhupada's trip there, and it's so many years later, and we see what just exactly what Srila Prabhupada wanted to happen has happened there.
That's
quite amazing.
I just said Prabhupada made the Jayatirtha so many years ago. That statement about the Russians becoming the best devotees, Prabhupada also said the only way to put off the inevitable war between Russia and America was to distribute his books in Russia. So,
did it work?
So the only way to describe to you what little you can do in a few minutes, I wanted to read a letter that a devotee who was imprisoned wrote. He was imprisoned in a psychiatric hospital. He was not able to write until the last year of his 5-year sentence. And it just puts you a little bit in touch with what numerous devotees went through during this time. My name is Alexei Arturovich Musatov. I was born December 5th, 1959 in Moscow. My Hare Krishna name is Asutosh Das. I belong to an old Russian noble family which has always had strong religious traditions. And since the early 80s, when I came in contact with the Hare Krishna teachings, it became the basis of my life. In April 1983, I was arrested for spreading the Vedic philosophy and for translating the books of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We had been translating books for a number of years, and the authorities were constantly following our activities. Their agents kept coming to my apartment disguised as plumbers or repairmen. They inspected the rooms, trying to find out what was going on here. All legal norms were openly violated from the very start. I was arrested and put in a cell, and the trial was entirely prearranged from the very beginning to the end. They never collected evidence from me. Krishna mantra gave me energy for life, both spiritual and material. First, they took me to a preliminary detention cell where I stayed 3 days. Next, I was transferred to Butyrskaya prison. I spent 15 months there altogether. I was kept in all kinds of cells. From the very beginning, they were trying to force me to testify about other devotees. There are so many different types of cells. Those for a few people, big cells for 40 people, and they squeezed 60 people in. People slept on the floor. The conditions were very bad. Many smoked. I had great problems with food because the meals containing meat, and I had to live literally on bread and water as there was nothing else to eat. All the time I was subject to psychological pressure. They threatened me with huge prison terms and demanded that I should renounce Krishna consciousness. After a few months in this prison, I was sent for a medical examination. I always refused to give any evidence, and I refused to sign any papers. I was sent for a psychiatric medical examination. This was arranged in order to declare me mentally sick on whatever grounds they could think of. The examination lasted 15 minutes. I was declared mentally incapable. If I was mentally deranged, then they should have treated me differently and put me in a prison with sick inmates where I could have received a special diet. Instead, I was sent back to the same cell where they kept me the rest of the time, illegal as it was. On the way to the medical exam, the investigator kept telling me they would immediately release me if I would only sign a denunciation of Krishna consciousness. He told me otherwise I would receive 5 years. He called me Jesus Christ when I refused to talk to him. Throughout my stay in that prison, I had no chance to meet a lawyer. I knew absolutely nothing about my case, and I did not speak to any lawyer except that one time when they drove me for that psychiatric exam. It was purely by chance that one of my cellmates was taken to court and he met some devotees. The devotees told him about our situation, the other's situation, and my own. I had been in detention for about a year by that time, and I had no information of my own situation. I found out that the trial had already taken place. I realized that I had been declared mentally sick and that now I would be handed over to a specialized psychiatric system. I was horrified. People said that the most awful things about these special psychiatric hospitals, even among the criminals where I was, people would do anything in order not to go to the SPH with its physical and psychological methods of manipulating human consciousness, their brutality, and their experiments with various medicines. In June 1984, I was sent to the SPH in Smolensk. I learned that Ananta Shanti Das was there. For a few months, I lived under very bad conditions in what the common criminals call the slime pond. There is no fresh air at all. A dirty cement floor and 3-level plank beds. The small cells house 8 persons, but 2 or 3 more would be added and they would sleep on the floor. Because there was no ventilation, many people would have heart attacks, suffocate, and faint before they would be allowed to go out and breathe fresh air. It is impossible to imagine such conditions. What I read in prisons before the revolution, I think, were almost idyllic compared to what we had to suffer. In autumn 1984, I was transferred to the fourth ward of the Smolensk SPH. Immediately on arrival, I was given a course of sulfazine, a concentrated course of injections which result in a high temperature. The injections themselves are very painful, but some member of the medical staff make them even more painful by choosing the sensitive areas on purpose. The first course treatment lasted a month, and the high temperatures held the whole time. As a result, I lost 15 kilograms. I felt so weak I could hardly walk, and my energy went into resisting the medicine. They kept telling me, "We are cleaning you. We are making your consciousness healthier." I tried to find a common language with the doctors and administration to tell them something about Krishna and convince them that it is not an antisocial philosophy, but a synthesis of the highest human wisdom, that all its ideas are profoundly human and intended to realize the best qualities of man. I must say that such people understood me, and moreover, some of the staff began to sympathize with me. The cells had plank beds, and they can hold from 10 to 40 or 50 people. They have no bathrooms. One is allowed to go to the latrine a few times a day. We were constantly watched. The administration sometimes aroused the orderlies against us. It's a deliberate policy to prevent any alliance to grow between the orderlies and the patients. All the devotees who were imprisoned will one day make an archive of Krishna consciousness and describe all that they have seen, because we have acquired a really invaluable experience of survival within this system of labor camps and psychiatric hospitals. We should write a book and call it A Manual for Courage. Sometimes they apply insulin shocks, which affect both the conscious and the subconscious mind. After insulin shocks, people lose their ability to think logically, they lose their self-control, and the ability to adequately comprehend reality. I felt that if I remained faithful to Krishna consciousness, they would never let me out of this system, and I would stay there forever. I cannot betray my own life. I told them that it was my mission, and I would follow it throughout my life. All the meals there are restricted in time. There's only 5 minutes. And in spite of that, I found time to offer food to Krishna and make prasadam. This annoyed them. You can believe if you wish. We cannot change your heart. But do it inside yourself. Do not show it outwardly. In that hospital, there were many people from the criminal underworld. And they used to call me saint behind my back. Whatever the conditions of my stay there were, I was always trying to talk about Krishna, about my spiritual experience. My preaching and philosophical talks raised people's morale and improved their moods. They began to communicate with others. They wanted to live. My lifestyle, my ideas, my activities in the psychiatric hospital were a living example for them. I felt tense most of the time, so I was trying to find a place to be alone for a few moments to have kirtan. When there were kinder orderlies on duty, I would ask them to lock me up alone in the canteen. They would do it because they realized that I needed it. Those were the happiest moments in my day there. I looked forward to them because he would be able to chant. I had to chant the Maha Mantra also while walking with others along a narrow corridor. There were so many people, we had to walk to the end of the corridor, turn around, and walk back. It was awfully noisy. Sometimes I would lie on my bed and cover my head with a blanket at night. This was the best time, when the lights were off and the bars were locked. It was so quiet. Then I could hear the Hare Krishna mantra. Day after day, the mantra gave me new energy for spiritual activity, new force for preaching, for helping people. I felt responsible to help others. I saw many people in desperate situations, people who were broken, smashed, people who were in poor psychological shape. It was hard for me also. I always tried to help others, to give advice, moral support. When I saw how a person was changing, his face changing, he began opening up, I felt very happy that I could help someone. Just by living the way I did, I attracted others, and they began chanting. I did not even mention it, but people were chanting. While walking up and down the corridor, I would hear people say Krishna, and I would hear them talking about Krishna's devotees. A great event for me happened one day in the hospital when I met Ananta Shanti.
Anatoly Pinayev. Anatoly Pinayev, and I had the chance to meet each other. This was the moment both of us were looking forward to. We were kept in different wards, but we looked around every day while walking out of the doors, hoping to catch sight of each other. Our brief contacts were a source of energy for life, a great encouragement for both of us. Meeting each other for a few minutes somewhere in the passages or on the staircase gave so much to our souls that we would spend hours thinking about it. When the hospital administration learned about our contacts and conversation, they suddenly transferred Ananta Shanti into another special ward.
It was a great disappointment for us because it was quite unexpected. Despite the hard conditions, I was doing my best to lead the life of a devotee. I got up early in the morning, about 5 o'clock, before all the others, to have a little quiet time. This gave me energy to live through the day. In 1986, I was transferred to a regional psychiatric hospital where I was able to write letters. I began writing and preaching through letters, and the responses I received, I saw how the mentality of the people was changing. This was very inspiring. And I wish to thank everyone, all of my spiritual brothers and sisters who helped take part in the efforts to help us. This was what gave us strength through this whole ordeal. Thank you, Hare Krishna. And then just one more short description of another devotee named Kamala Mala, who was also imprisoned. He was sitting with Kerma Rupa, whom my husband had sent to Moscow. I think it was Moscow. And by sending different devotees in to meet the devotees, they would get to learn things, and they would also be able to exchange little rolled up letters like you saw in that book, those small letters. When they're folded up, they're very easy to hide. But if they're a normal size, they're not easy to hide. So he was explaining to Kerma Rupa, Sannyas and I have both felt more Krishna conscious when we were in prison because it's a more distressful situation. Now that we have gotten out and there is a decrease in intensity, we feel like we have regressed in our Krishna consciousness. We are not as strong. It is harder for us to maintain and avoid becoming complacent. In some ways, we liked being in prison better because there we were able to achieve a more intense and fixed meditation on Krishna and Guru than at present, with Maya presenting so many allurements. There are many details and incidents that took place with prisoners. He described to Kerma Rupa the rewarding experience of being put in a cell with a completely miserable person and seeing him become happy by the application of Krishna consciousness. This happened very often, observing this transformation, and it was a great source of inspiration and increased faith in the process of chanting the holy name. The term of imprisonment only served to increase the faith of those devotees who followed strictly despite the horrible conditions. They have become quite fearless as a result. Outside of jail, one's activities might effectively be checked due to fear of being put in jail. But once one is incarcerated, things usually don't get worse, so one can preach without fear. While in the KGB jail, which is the nicest and most clean, they were treated nicely and there were intelligent people to preach to. There they had the opportunity to chant 64 rounds a day, practically undisturbed, and they would offer arti to a piece of paper with the names of Panchatattva and Guru on it. I was not able to find, but I have many, many more boxes of nectar around. Yeah. But I wanted to find the prison letters. I haven't been able to find them because they're amazing. They would say how they saved money, and they would get like two little pieces of coin or something for doing their kitchen work or something, and then they would save it up and save it up, and then they would buy ingredients to make Simply Wonderfuls, and then they would distribute them in the prison, and they enjoyed that very, very much. So I think that's okay. I wanted to share that part with you because it's very special how these devotees underwent such torture, as my husband said, and they became even more inspired in their Krishna consciousness. And we owe them all a great debt of gratitude, and we thank them very much for what they went through to continue and help spread Krishna consciousness. Thank you, Hari Bol.
I want to say one thing. This devotee who Hari Puja was referring to, Kamala Mala, he's Armenian, and his brother was Atmananda, who's since passed away, and their best friend was Sannyasdas. And when we lived in England, they called us one morning to, because it was the next day, I think, was Harikesh Maharaj's Vyas Puja, and they had no idea how to observe that. So Hari Puja spent like an hour on the phone with them explaining how to, and she talked for 15, 20 minutes and the connection was cut. So we know why that happened. And then they'd call back again. So she had like 3 20-minute sessions with him, and she explained how to offer Vyas Puja. And the next day they were arrested and by the KGB and put in prison. But they learned, and then they shared it afterwards.
Just following, you know, what you read about 4 years ago, I got a phone conversation with Ananta Shanti, and he described one time when he was in a cell that the KGB wanted to break his will, so the cell was very damp, and he had been tortured, and then he thought. He was full of fear. Then he thought, if I'm going to go another time, I'm not going to be able to take it. I'm going to say whatever they want. So he was really fearful about that. And then all of a sudden, it was coming from Krishna within his heart. That verse from Bhagavad Gita came very, very powerful, a saying that the soul can never be cut into pieces. The soul can never be destroyed. It is imperishable, and it cannot be drawn by water or scattered by the wind. And then he got the full realization that I am the soul, actually. They cannot do anything to me. Whatever they do to the body, I'm free. And he felt completely free, and all this fear in that very painful situation disappeared. So It was very, very powerful realization Krishna sent.
Thank you very much for listening to us, especially for putting up with me. And we owe all of these stories to Srila Prabhupada, that Prabhupada made all of this possible and making it possible for the devotees to be spreading Krishna consciousness by leaps and bounds. These days you look at pictures of festivals in the Ukraine or on the Black Sea or in Moscow, and there's, you know, one year there's 8,000 devotees in attendance, and next year there's 9,000 devotees in attendance, next year there's 10,000 devotees in attendance. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I mean, so much so, when you go to Vrindavan, you know, the shop signs are in English, Hindi, and Russian. I mean, some people say, they're everywhere. But even here. But it's amazing that it's amazing that to have been blessed by Srila Prabhupada and Krishna to be a part of it. And it's all by the mercy of Sri Sri Radhasham Sundar, Krishna Balaram, and Sri Sri Gornatai. Hare Krishna. Jai. Thank you.
This makes me feel like I have done nothing to compare with what we just heard. It's very, very wonderful. And I want to thank them very much, and it seems like we should have another session, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hare Bol.
Thank you.
Is there any plan to publish all these letters and everything that you have? There's not at all.
Yeah.
The rest of them are written. Nobody. Yeah, you didn't get to see it.
Hare Krishna. I'd like to put a plug in for one devotee, Bhakti Charlie Granger. He had set up a website called hkussr.com. And that hkussr.com, where there's pictures and stories and so many things. Plus, he has a website that's called alachalaclasses.com, where every single class that's given here in New Ramamurti is recorded and posted online. So if you ever want to miss a class and want to check it, you can go to that website.
Well,
this was one.
Hare Krishna. Just to appreciate, and Mother Mukha made a special cake for this occasion, so please take a piece of cake outside, they're going to serve.
That was nice. Pete, where did the other Gita go, the hard one? No, there were two here. No, there were three Gitas. Only one? So two people have put their Gitas in?